Jack O'Brien is known for his work in musicals such as Hairspray and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. A couple of months ago, he came on the show to discuss his work on The Coast of Utopia, the trilogy of Tom Stoppard's plays that is currently being performed at Lincoln Center Theater. He has recently changed gears, though, and is directing a different sort of trilogy, Puccini's opera trilogy, Il Trittico, being performed at the Metropolitan Opera through May 12th. I'm very pleased it has brought Jack O'Brien to my show again today. Hello.
Hey, nicely pronounced, Leonard.
Il Trittico.
It's really glorious.
Many people today associate you still, despite Tom Stoppard, with Broadway musicals. Are musicals and operas part of the same family?
People keep saying, I don't understand this question.
Well, the reason
no,
is...
No, because people keep saying...
Because you're trying to get dramatic stuff out of a musical performance.
Yeah, I know. But the truth of the matter is, when you sort of pull the camera back, basically, what am I doing but trying to tell a story, but my medium is people. Now, they can be singers, they can be hoofers, they can be dramatic actors. But basically, the job is I've got to try to make this story live, given whatever that matrix may be. And yes, the personalities and the skills may vary, but the approach basically is how do I get that person to tell that specific tale?
I guess one of the reasons is that I think our standards for opera performance have changed over the years. When I was a kid, you had something like Dolores de Los Angeles, magnificent voice, but nobody expected her to do much acting, do the singing and stand there and just sing those things as magnificently as possible with Jan Pierce by your side. Mm-hmm. That's no longer the case. And now a director really means something.
Well, Ken, let's face it. Don't you think Callas changed that somewhat? I mean, almost single-handedly. Suddenly there was an astonishingly original, and some may say controversial, but certainly an unmistakable voice that also had this extraordinary dramatic intensity and intelligence. And instead of just hearing it or looking at it, people were suddenly engaged on a dramatic level. And I think it whetted people's... it's like sports. You keep thinking they'll never break the four-minute mile. And then suddenly,
Roger Bannister.
12-year-olds are doing it, And swimming goals as well. I mean, the numbers keep dropping. And what we do is exceptional people come along and change the map.
I never thought of Roger Bannister as being the Maria Callas of track, but maybe he is. So have you done a lot of opera?
Pardon me?
Have you done a lot of opera?
Yes, Leonard. I mean, I curiously enough, my career was launched in the 70s with the first full-length Porgy and Bess that anybody ever saw. And I was totally unknown at that time, and it sort of delivered me. And then there was a lot of opera activity in the 70s. I did Santa Fe, I did San Francisco, I did Houston. I did a rather well-received street scene at New York City Opera here in the 80s, I think it was. So I had this this chunk of my life that was operatic until I realized I was excluding myself from the theater, and I didn't want to do that.
There is a difference in the theater that if you have a hit, it goes on and on and on. With opera, it's always a short run, and you can only hope that it's received well and then gets revived again and again and again. The Jack O'Brien version of.
Yes, exactly. One would.
You have to show up every time?
One blushes to call it that.
Does Zeffirelli show up every time they do one of his productions?
I can't imagine. Can you?
Let's talk about Il Trittico. This is a trilogy. Are you specializing in trilogies?
No, please no. What will that do? It'll limit me from the rest of my life. No, it just happened. It was just an unlikely, extraordinary opportunity that in adjacent buildings in Lincoln Center back to back, I would do Tom's trilogy in one theater and Puccini's in the other.
You hardly have to walk far. It's about 200 feet.
Yes, well, by the time I finished, I was crawling, let me tell you. I was walking. I'd never entered into it. But no, I mean, they're just these are very different, of course. Tom's trilogy is our three plays united by a historical imperative of people's lives that were going on over a period of decades. In the case of Puccini, there are three stories that he liked, completely unrelated, which is basically how we did them. Doug Schmidt has given three of the most magnificent mise-en-scène sort of worlds that you've ever seen there. And the Met has given it a roster of the most beautiful acting voices it's ever been my pleasure to witness.
So if they're different, in fact, there's different tone, they're really three very different operas, Why are they presented as a trilogy?
Well, because he wrote them. There were three one acts that he actually wrote for the Metropolitan Opera.
So this was performed first at the Met?
It was. It was premiered in 1918, and it's New York or the Met's very own Puccini. And this is only the third time that these pieces have been prepared and viewed together. Very often they're knocked apart. Somebody will do a Schicchi with something, or they'll do Tibaro with something. They almost never do Suor Angelica, which to me is some of the most gorgeous writing, I think, vocal writing I've ever heard in my life, and illuminated by Barbara Frittoli, this extraordinary soprano. It's really something to behold. But the truth of the matter is they've been separated from birth, as it were, and now they're being united, and what a uniting it is for all of us. And we're sort of gobsmacked looking at what Puccini imagined on these three different occasions.
What they do have in common is that they're all about death. But then I thought, did Puccini ever write an opera that didn't end in a death?
Oh, my God, you're asking. This is the opera quiz I should be on.
No, right I was thinking about it. You know,
I don't know.
We go on and on and on. Yeah, Madame Butterfly, death.
I know. Not a few. Well, Johnny Schicchi's a laugh. I mean, you know, that's a comedy. It's the only comedy he wrote, but boy, he got that one right. It's very funny. It is about death, yes, of course, but the person's dead before the curtain goes up, so at least you know how it's going to come out.
So here, this is something that has only been done, you say, three times before, putting these all together. How do you stage something like that? Because it's really like it's not the same, even as doing The Coast of Utopia, where there's a certain continuity. You're really staging three operas, and I would think that three operas, even if they're one act each, take a lot more time to put together than one three-act opera.
Good for you. You go to the head of the class and we'll have you on opera quiz in 2 weeks. Yes, that's true. It isn't just three little scenes. It's three different operas with different mentalities, different casts, in most cases. In this case, the glorious mezzo Stephanie Blythe goes through all three and shines in every one of them. But that's not the point. The point is they are united somewhat by, I guess, thematically, the idea of death. But basically, it's this glorious composer at the height of his power sort of thinking, I'm going to take one from column A, one from column B, and so on. It's pretty astonishing. The range.
Well, Stephanie Blythe obviously appreciates you. She told the New York Times that you are very turned on by the process of directing opera. Is there something different about it? I would have thought that directing The Coast of Utopia, in a sense, is almost like directing opera because you had such a large project and there's a certain musicality to the three plays.
Yeah,
it's Tom Sopran's language,
true.
In fact.
Those are big canvases, both of them. And one is an historical imperative and the other one is a musical one. But I'm turned on by getting up in the morning. I mean, I'm rampantly enthusiastic. And it's true that I had a glorious, glorious time with these people and their great talent.
Well, you're also very fortunate that you have some of the best opera singers around today: Stephanie Blythe, Salvatore Lecitra, Maria Gulagina. Is it Gulagina?
Gulagina, yeah.
Have you worked with any of them before?
No, they were all brand new to me. I knew Stephanie out just vaguely, socially outside the opera house, but I never worked with any of them. Boy, are they amazing. And they're so much fun to work with, because if you bring them viable theatrical ideas, if you start discussing character with them and motivation, they just come alive. And I have a feeling a lot of people don't do that, and that's too bad, because they're capable of unbelievable nuance.
Well, in the case of motivation, how much of that is transmitted to through the singing and how much through the other parts of the body? Because when you're singing an aria, aren't you just singing an aria?
I suppose, but you can say, what makes Levine the great the conductor that he is? I mean, isn't he just waving his hands in front of the orchestra?
And I always thought that's what it was. I thought I could do it just as well.
Well, watch him. I mean, I've had this extraordinary ability to be in the room with a man when he's, as I said, dipping his hands into these rivers of color and pulling out the most amazing shades. And because he understands it emotionally and dramatically and musically, he can do very interpretively subtle things. This is also true of the singer. If you give them if, for instance, in the case of Maria Gulagina, we're talking about something that they don't talk about a lot in Tabarro. This couple lost a baby a year before the opera begins. A baby died, and that changes the relationship. And we gave her the ability to find a little baby hat in the bottom of her laundry basket, which, of course, resonates powerfully for any woman who's lost a child. And immediately this theatrical animal that she is begins to sort of turn over in the most amazing revelatory way. And so they can do and do different things with motivational insight.
And to some degree, you probably have more freedom with an opera because there are probably fewer stage directions in a libretto than there are in most plays that are written today.
Yes, but you got to watch them carefully. I mean, you know, somebody like Puccini is so inherently a man of theater that I keep saying, you know, it's almost like these scores are the world's first movie scores before movies were invented. They're so richly, dramatically shaped, and he's talking to you all the time in musical terms of some sort of, I don't know, emotional current that he wants you to see. And in order to do that, you use everything at your disposal. But, you know, the singer and, God knows, when they're willing to play with you, the conductor are big, big key elements in this. A director in an opera is third or fourth down from the top. It isn't like the theater where they're always saying, "What do you think, Jack?" And you keep raising your hand saying, I'm over here. I've got a note." Because they, you know, they have the composer, they have the conductor, they have their vocal coach, they have the prompter, and it's e pluribus unum, if you know what I mean.
Often with the more famous operas, the audience practically sings along with the most famous arias. Are there famous arias in any of these operas?
Yes. Gianni Schicchi has the O mio babbio caro, which is one of the, as we laughingly say, hit tunes of opera. And although there are ravishingly beautiful melodic lines in all the other all the other operas that are equally glorious, but that happens to be, on everyone's hit list.
So these will be performed at the Met through May 12th, not every night.
No, of course not. They have to sleep.
And then it gets put to rest for a while?
I think so. I mean, it's not in the rep next year, but I'm told I've got to come back 2 years from now. I think it is. They've whispered in my shell-like ear, but I don't remember the dates. I'm gonna say, but yeah, it's coming back.
Well, they must be very pleased with.
I think we're all happy. We're unbelievably happy, and what a treat to see these pieces put back together as they were originally conceived.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about it, Jack O'Brien, who's gone from the trilogy of The Coast of Utopia to the trilogy of Puccini's Il Trittico, being performed at the Metropolitan Opera through May 12th. Thank you so much.
Lovely to be here, Leonard.